Hello and welcome to the Home is Where the Hearth is podcast in the Inner Sanctum. And today I'm determined to finish our little mini-series here on chivalry and literature. So this is actually part four. We've covered loads from what is chivalry through various works of literature from... Well, first of all, its relationship should be to the lady and our lady, Amour Courtois, Red Book of Montserrat, Dante, Homer, Shakespeare, its absence and its presence in various of his plays, Don Quixote. And then last week, I think we finished with I Promessi Sposi, The Betrothed by Manzoni, looking especially perhaps at the relationship between Lorenzo and Lucia. How are we going to finish the day? By going and looking at chivalry and literature in the 20th century. And we're going to begin with Chesterton. And really, Chesterton, he's a chivalrous writer. And we can find chivalry resplendent in much of his work. But I'm going to concentrate on just one of his novels, not one of the better known ones. If we think of the novels of Chesterton, we probably think, first of all, of The Man Who Was Thursday, and after that, perhaps, The Napoleon of Notting Hill. But many of us overlook what is, at least sometimes, I fancy to be my favourite of Chesterton's novels. It's either that or The Man Who Was Thursday. And that's The Ball and the Cross. And the chivalry in this is not so much about a lady, as about the chivalry that exists between two men. Specifically, the character of MacIan, who is a Scottish Highlander and a cradle Catholic, and Turnbull, who's a Scottish Lowlander from the Lowlands of Scotland and an atheist. And Turnbull owns a bookshop in London near St Paul's Cathedral, and MacIan sees something scandalous in the bookshop, scandalizing the mother of God. So here we have the chivalrous setup, first of all, that MacIan feels called, duty-bound, in honor as a knight of the Holy Ghost, to take the title that was given to Chesterton. And smashed the window of the bookshop in order to seek satisfaction for the scandalous attack and affront on the Blessed Virgin. So we have MacIan defending the lady, indeed, in this case, our lady. And then Turnbull, of course, is outraged that his window has been broken. He's an atheist. And the two men decide that they want to fight a duel. And again, very chivalrous, right? The fighting of a duel over the honour of their respective beliefs, the honour of the Catholic and the honour of the atheist. And the key thing about the book is that it shows Chesterton's respect for all honest seekers after truth. This is another important element of The Man Who Was Thursday, the six philosophers. Insofar as we are genuinely seeking to know the truth, we are on a noble, if perhaps somewhat quixotic, quest, especially as ultimately we cannot know the truth without the help of God revealing himself. I mean, in other words, that philosophy can only take us so far, and then we need revelation. That really is the ultimate core and message and meaning of The Man Who Was Thursday. But going back to The Ball and the Cross, these two men are both seen as being dignified and courteous and chivalrous in their desire to defend their own philosophical position even unto death. Now, of course, you know, many people hold a philosophical position that's not based upon a genuine quest for truth. The majority of neo-atheists, for instance, aren't really interested in discovering the truth, as in attacking Christianity. It's really motivated by an animosity towards towards Christianity in particular and God in general, and therefore it's not about seeking the truth, but attacking what one doesn't like. If we allow our pride and our prejudice to get in the way of our philosophical quest for truth, we will get nowhere near the truth, and in fact we'll start to hate the truth wherever we find it contradicting our pride and prejudice. So that, I think, is often the case with neo-atheists, but certainly not all atheists, and certainly not Turnbull in the novel. And the key element of the novel is actually that McKeon and Turnbull, irrespective of their very diverse philosophical perspectives as an atheist and as a Catholic, have more honour and integrity than the rest of the world, who are indifferent to the truth. They're indifferent to the issues. They're indifferent to the differences between atheism and theism, between atheism and Catholicism. It's this lethargy, this deadly sin of sloth that we see in the general culture. In other words, all of the backdrop to the novel, all the other lesser characters who are not as chivalrous, not as noble as the noble atheist and the noble Catholic. There's a twist at the end of the novel and some sort of almost supernatural, bizarre turn, but I'm not going to spoil the novel for those that haven't read it, but that's the gist of the background. So chivalry in the ball and the cross. The book, by the way, just so you, in case you're wondering where the novel gets its title from, it was inspired by the ball and the cross on top of the dome of St. Paul's Cathedral in London, which has a ball and the cross surmounting the ball. And the difference is that the ball signifies the world, the globe, and the cross, of course, Christianity and by extension God. So it's the fight between the ball and the cross, if you like, that symbolised in Turnbull and McKeon. Okay, let's move on from Chesterton to C.S. Lewis now. And again, we could find many instances of chivalry in Lewis's work, but the one that strikes me, actually, well, there's two. There's Perelandra and that hideous strength. Perelandra actually has Ransom defending the lady who is the Eve of the country of Venus, known as Perelandra in the novel, she is the lady who's awaiting the coming of the man, or the woman awaiting the coming of the man, there's the satanic figure who attempts to poison her, and specifically to poison her innocence prior to the arrival of the Adam figure. And so we find the whole work is set up with the character of Ransom being the knight in shining armor, if you like, that comes to the lady's defense against the satanic figure who we could say iconically, symbolically, can be seen as a dragon. So very much a St. George and the dragon scenario, appropriate, by the way, as I'm recording this only 2 days before St. George's Day, and the Poem of the Week podcast this week will be a festival for England and St. George and Shakespeare, because April 23rd is not just St. George's Day, but Shakespeare's birthday and also the date on which Shakespeare died. So when you finish listening to this, tune in to this week's Poem of the Week podcast for the St. George's Day festival. The other C.S. Lewis novel I want to talk about is That Hideous Strength. And again, there's two sort of levels of chivalry going on in that. There is, first of all, the position of Ransom, who is a sort of Arthurian figure as the Fisher King. And the whole of Ransom's entourage in that novel really is the presence of chivalry in a world poisoned by chicanery and specifically the satanic workings of the NICE. And so their role is a dragon slaying also. But within that, the main story, if you like, is about the marriage between Mark and Jane Studdock, And this is Lewis at his best, you know, contemplation on the meaning of marriage and the relationship between husband and wife. And again, neither Jane or Mark know how to be chivalrous towards each other because they are being selfish in their relationship. Mark, perhaps, especially, but both of them. And so one of the elements is of the novel is how the husband and wife learn to be chivalrous towards each other, thereby saving their marriage. Okay, we're going to move on to finish with Tolkien. And The Hobbit, of course, is again about chivalry, but it's not about defending the lady, but it is about slaying the dragon, of course. We see this sort of more general understanding of chivalry, which is the necessity in the Christian understanding of love, of laying down our lives for the beloved, as St. George lays down his lives for the damsel in distress, as knights in shining armour lay down their lives for damsels in distress. These, if you like, are the visions of the Christian laying down his life for his neighbour against the power of the devil, against the power of evil, against the power of sin, against the dragons that we all meet in our lives. And then The Lord of the Rings is very similar, in fact, because it's about bearing the burden of sin, the ring signifying and symbolizing sin itself. Thus, it's destroyed on March the 25th, the Feast of the Annunciation, and the historic traditional date of the crucifixion. So therefore, the destruction of the ring is synonymous with sin, in the sense that sin itself is, of course, unmade or destroyed by the redemption that we receive from God through Christ in his life, death, and resurrection. So therefore, if the ring symbolizes sin, then the wearing of the ring is the practice of sin, but the bearing of the ring, the carrying of it, is the carrying of the burden of sin, which makes the ring in this sense the cross. So in that sense, we can see Frodo as a cross bearer. But of course, all Christians in growing in nobility and sanity, the nobility and sanity which is sanctity, are called to take up their cross, to lay down their lives. So we see at the heart of The Lord of the Rings this chivalrous notion of being willing and prepared to take up the burden of the sins of others, to lay down our lives willingly for Christendom, for civilization, for the powers of goodness, truth, and beauty against the forces of darkness. And if you really want to understand how Tolkien understands chivalry, then we need go no further than his wonderful words that he mentioned in from one of his letters about the Blessed Sacrament. Now, if you think that chivalry is all only about knights in shining armour, well, yes, symbolically, but we are all called to be knights in shining armour in our reverence towards not just the Mother of God, but the presence of God in the Eucharist. So this is Tolkien on the Blessed Sacrament. Out of the darkness of my life, so much frustrated, I put before you the one great thing to love on earth, the Blessed Sacrament. There you will find romance, glory, honour, fidelity, and the true way of all your loves on earth, and more than that, death. By the divine paradox, that which ends life and demands the surrender of all, and yet by the taste or foretaste of which alone can what you seek in your earthly relationships, love, faithfulness, joy, be maintained, or take on that complexion of reality, of eternal endurance, which every man's heart desires. That is a perfect way, I would suggest, of ending our discussion of chivalry and literature, Tolkien on the Blessed Sacrament. So that concludes our four-part mini-series on chivalry and literature. I have no idea what I'll be talking about next week, and home is where the hearth is, so do tune in next week to find out, because by next week I will know. Until then, thanks so much, as always, for joining me and for joining the Inner Sanctum and being part of my group of friends that I speak to every week in these podcasts. Until next week, goodbye and God bless.